So this is the Cult Couch episode 3.
Episode 3, or 2.5, depending on how we're going to be numbering these things.
Well, yeah, the episode that we did about Mark Lester is episode 2.
Right.
Yeah, so this would be episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what kind of math you do, but...
That's crazy, the Dave math.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just figured...
Cause I don't want to get into decimal points and stuff.
Like, yeah, that would get confusing. Yeah, and that would be sort of implying this as half a podcast, which is it's not.
Mm-mm.
It's a full-on podcast.
Yeah.
We're talking about at least 3 movies today.
Yeah, well, I have 6 movies I want to touch on.
I've only seen 4 of them?
I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen... Well, today we're talking about Shaw Brothers movies.
Yeah.
Just as a preamble. And I've seen Heads for Sale, Sword and Loot,
mm-hmm.
One-Armed Swordsman.
Yeah.
And now Come Drink With Me.
Yeah.
So that's 4.
What we basically decided to do was to talk about the entire Shaw Brothers martial arts like run over the course of however many podcasts it takes.
It's going to take a lot of podcasts.
And it's going to be every second podcast, so you won't have to... It's not like the next 12 podcasts are all going to be about Shaw Brothers, because that would be cruel to people who don't like martial arts cinema.
Well, and we'd be limiting our audience. And I mean, honestly, like there are so many other movies I want to talk about. We can't just talk about Shaw Brothers. Awesome as the Shaw Brothers are.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying with the 2.5 thing, where it's sort of...
I need to get away from the Shaw Brothers now, like, after tonight, for a little while, myself.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And start watching Hellraiser movies, which is going to be episode 4. So what we'll basically be doing is, like, in the middle of the month, hopefully around, like, you know, on or around the 15th of the month. This one's a little bit late, because episode 2 was a little bit late.
Yeah.
It took a few days to be able to coordinate it to record, and then a few days to edit. But ideally, we'd like to have an episode in the middle of the month that continues our exploration of Shaw Brothers. And then at the end of the month, or the beginning of the next month, however you want us to look at it,
yeah.
Then we'll do our sort of usual theme, like our self-contained episode, which next will be Hellraiser.
Which I'm super excited about.
Mm-hmm.
I love these horror franchises, and last night we just watched the first Puppet Master movie, which I'm also very excited about doing.
We didn't watch the first Puppet Master movie. You watched your first Puppet Master movie.
Yes, sorry, my first Puppet Master movie, which was Puppet Master 3.
Do not get Puppet Master confused with Toulon's Revenge.
Wasn't that Toulon's Revenge? Puppet Master 3 is Toulon's Revenge.
Yeah, Puppet Master 1 is no. I think there's mention of Toulon in the first couple, but I don't think he appears until the third part.
Okay, yeah, he's sort of like the driving force of the franchise, it seems like.
Mm.
He's the one who gave the puppets life in the first place.
Toulon?
Yeah.
I don't know how we got talking about Toulon.
I don't know. But yeah, we'll do the Hellraiser podcast next, but now we are talking about the Shaw Brothers.
Yeah. First, let's talk about maybe, like, what was the first Shaw Brothers movie you ever saw?
The first Shaw Brothers movie
And how did you end up seeing it?
Well, I saw it because you gave it to me. You gave me 36 Chambers of Shaolin.
Okay, yeah.
Which is... As far as I've seen, I mean, I've seen some really good Shaw Brothers movies so far, but that is, when I think of Shaw Brothers, that's the movie I think of.
That's one of the ones that popularized them in America, for sure,
mm-hmm.
Along with the Five Venoms.
Which was another one that you lent me and was also fantastic.
And I think I maybe lent you Have Sword Will Travel as well?
Yep, that one was pretty good.
Yeah.
But after watching 36 Chambers and Five Deadly Venoms, like...
Yeah, that's into the... The later Shaw stuff that, I mean, those are two films that we're definitely going to cover once we get to those time periods. We're going to go chronologically, so...
Yeah, so the first movie we watched was in 66, right?
Yeah, Come Drink With Me was the first one first chronologically that we watched of them.
Now, you were saying that, what was the movie that was sort of thought of as the first sort of quintessential Chinese martial arts movie?
Well, the thing is, when I started researching this, I mean, I've been into Shaw Brothers stuff for, like, a couple years now, but when I started researching it, the thing I discovered is that there's probably 12 to 20 movies that claim to be the first to do whatever it is. Like,
yeah.
Before I discovered that Come Drink With Me even existed, I was under the impression that the One-Armed Swordsman was, like, the first Chinese martial arts movie, which... Now that I've, like, looked into the Shaw Brothers and Chinese martial arts movies in general, is a ridiculous statement. Like, in 1967, to claim that the first Chinese martial arts movie came out is crazy, because there's a 1965 movie called Temple of the Red Lotus.
Uh-huh.
That's a martial arts movie, and obviously Come Drink With Me is all about the martial arts. The only thing that I've really discovered as far as what the first movie is in that movement is that all those claims seem to be bogus to me.
Yeah, because I mean,
because every first movie that I watch, or every movie that I watch that claims to be the first one, that leads me to a previous film, a precursor to that, that introduced a lot of the same elements.
For sure. And it's sort of like any genre of movie or even music or whatever. There will always be just sort of around a year. We'll say 1965 in this case, because it seems to be around there, right?
Yeah, the research I've done so far has led me to believe that, like, the first Shaw Brothers martial arts movie was in 65.
Okay.
As I learn more, I'll probably learn that's false.
Yeah, absolutely. But with any movement, there's just, like, a number of people who sort of do the same thing around the same time, and it's sort of heralded as the start of a new genre or a new style or what have you. And none of them are actually the first one. They were all just the first one. Yeah, either of the first two movies we talked about today could fall into that category. And if you're actually looking for chronologically the first one to come out, it would be a matter of months or, like, weeks till the next one came out. So it's sort of splitting hairs at that point.
Yeah, Come Drink With Me definitely had a lot of the elements that that I sort of think of as being kung fu movie elements. Uh-huh. Yeah, we'll get to that because we'll talk about each movie. But I'll just give a little bit of a background on the Shaw Brothers, like, organization, just sort of as a backdrop to the films that we're going to talk about.
Sure. Ryan's history lesson number one on the Shaw Brothers.
Yeah.
The beginning.
An interesting note is that I went to, you have to go to Wikipedia. First or second or third, or it's one of the first places you go when you're researching a topic.
Any topic.
Even if you can't believe it, there's links that'll take you to good articles and whatnot. But anyway, I went to the Shaw Brothers page, Shaw Brothers Studio page on Wikipedia, and I guess, like, as far as how long you have to scroll down, there was like 5 or 6 pages worth of material there.
Yeah.
And it was sort of didactic and historical and not super fun to read.
Yeah.
But when I scrolled down to the bottom to get to the links section, there was like a little MP3 embedded player there.
Uh-huh.
And I pressed play, and not knowing what it was, because it's not well labeled, because Wikipedia is an ugly fucking site.
Yeah.
But it was a really classy sounding British guy reading the page out loud.
What?
Yeah. So I almost considered, instead of, like, creating some sort of a synopsis, and I still might do this, there could be lucky listeners out there who are going to hear this British man, because I might just insert him.
In the second half of the 1960s, the era's biggest studio, Shaw Brothers, inaugurated a new generation of wuxia films, starting with Zhu Zhenghong's Temple of the Red Lotus, 1965, a remake of the 1928 classic. These Mandarin productions were more lavish and in color. Their style was less fantastical and more intense, with stronger and more acrobatic violence. They were influenced by imported samurai movies from Japan, and by the wave of new school wuxia novels by authors like Jin Yong and Liang Yusheng that started in the 1950s. The trend may also have been encouraged by a need to win back local audiences from the newly popularized medium of television. The new school wuxia wave marked the move of male-oriented action films to the center of Hong Kong cinema, which had long been dominated by female stars and genres aimed at female audiences, such as romances and musicals. Even so, during the 1960s, female action stars like Cheng Pei-Pei and Connie Chan Po-Chu were prominent alongside male stars, such as former swimming champion Jimmy Wang Yu, and they continued an old tradition of female warriors in wuxia storytelling. The signature directors of the period were Chang Chae with One-Armed Swordsman, 1967, and Golden Swallow, 1968. And King Hu with Come Drink With Me, 1966. Hu soon left Shaw Brothers to pursue his own vision of wuxia with independent productions in Taiwan, such as the enormously successful Dragon Inn, 1967, aka Dragon Gate Inn. Chang stayed on and remained the Shore's prolific star director into the early 1980s.
Yeah, so I might actually just insert that in. But the Shaw organization itself started back in 1924 in Singapore. It was run by two brothers. Do you remember the names of the brothers?
Run Run Shaw?
There's Run Run Shaw, yeah.
Run Run Shaw, I can't remember the name of the other one.
Run Me.
Run Me.
And here's where we're starting to get into, because now, even just talking about the history of Shaw, we're going to have to apologize about our pronunciation.
Yeah, big disclaimer here. We are not, although we've watched many Chinese movies, somehow we are not very well versed in the Chinese language.
I don't speak any Chinese.
No, oh, you do. We have learned one thing from Chinese movies.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Which is yes.
Yeah. It's just their way of saying yes. It's sure.
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 But it's R-U-N-M-E. So is that Run Me? Run May?
Run May. I would say Run May.
Run Me. I'm going to call him Run Me.
Yeah.
but it was started by Run Run and Run Me Shaw. By 1939, they had amassed 139 cinemas across Southeast Asia.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was big shit. It was big shit.
Yeah, they're hot shit.
In 1961, they really started to grow to prominence. They had 850,000 square feet of land.
Wow.
And 1,500 permanent staff members on the docket. And they were producing up to 40 films per year by the time 1966 rolled around.
And this is in China, right?
Yes, it is.
You can own land in China?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. Well, you have to pay off the local
feudal warlord.
Exactly. It's always the evil local warlord guy. Yeah.
Yeah, all my Chinese history is probably about 600 years out of date because I watched these period, which are totally accurate, I'm sure, historically.
Oh, they are. They must be.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think every Chinese person can fly.
I believe so, yeah.
Even though these are period pieces, even the Chinese people I know in my daily life, I'm pretty sure they just don't want to show anyone up.
Yeah, because like they would be sort of reviled, like mutants or something like that.
Because mm-hmm.
they can fly, and every one of them knows kung fu.
Yeah, like there's no reason why the Chinese basketball team shouldn't be world champions. But they don't want because that's you, and that's something we'll talk about over the course of the Shaw Brothers series is honor and using your gifts not for personal gain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like using your ability to just like. With the greatest of ease, jump over a wall
uh-huh.
to slam dunk a basketball to make millions of dollars in the NBA.
It seems a little selfish.
Dishonorable.
Yeah, very.
For the longest time, I guess for most of the 40s and 50s and up to the mid-60s, they were still period pieces, but they were like operatic.
Like the Chinese Gone with the Wind?
Yeah, costume dramas, basically. And yeah. there was musical numbers and... They were a lot of them were based on famous Chinese operas and stuff like this. There wasn't a lot of there wasn't any martial arts movies.
Right.
There was sword play because there's always going to be sword play, but it was in sort of a, like was part of a greater plot line that would involve political intrigue,
right.
and romances between clans and stuff.
Right.
So there would have to be wars, but it was just the martial arts themselves weren't the focus
mm-hmm.
of the piece. And I mean, that didn't start until the mid 60s, which brings us to Come Drink With Me from 1966.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, what did you think of Come Drink With Me?
I liked it a lot. It's the early Shaw Brothers movies all have a sort of, it seems like they're finding their feet. Like, they all have the elements of the greater, later Shaw Brothers movies, and I do like these movies a lot, these early ones.
Yeah.
But when you get to 36 Chambers of Shaolin, and Supreme Swordsman, which was 1984, and Five Deadly Venoms, they sort of developed a bit of a rhythm.
Absolutely, because they were cranking that shit out.
Yeah, they were just like...
They had a formula, they had a stable of actors, and we're going to get into the stable of actors a lot more later on, and...
Yeah.
We're going to know so many Chinese people, like, a year from now.
And hopefully you will too, listener.
Yeah, but I agree that they refine their style. And certainly the movies got, like, crazier and
mm-hmm.
and bloodier.
Yeah.
And there was more focus on hand-to-hand combat
yeah.
as opposed to swordplay. The swordplay was, I mean, when they were starting to produce martial arts movies, they were really influenced by the... Japanese samurai films,
which came out in the I think the early 50s was the one of the first ones, and then they came to prominence largely, you know, Kurosawa and all that. in the late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah, Kurosawa's, most of Kurosawa's big films were in the 50s. Yeah, yeah, and that was stuff was directly influenced on the the first wave of Wuxia movies.
Are they Wuxia?
Oh, W-U-X-I-A.
That's, sure. Okay, so Wuxia.
But yeah, Come Drink With Me. It's there's a group of bandits who attack a government party.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to rescue their leader, who's been lawfully arrested because
he's a bad man.
Yeah, he's the leader of a team of bandits. The bandits steal the governor's son.
Yeah, the governor's son, who was, I wouldn't say so much leading the escort, but just sort of sitting in a pagoda, one of those traveling pagodas.
Yeah. He's kidnapped, like, right away. So the thing I like about, one of the things I like about Come Drink With Me is that we sort of get the setup, like, right in the first 6 minutes.
Yep.
Here's
your gang.
The bad guys have one of the good guys captured now.
Yep.
After 5 minutes, and we already established that the good guys have one of the bad guys captured.
Yep.
So,
without ever even having seen him.
Mm-hmm. I really like the villains in this.
The gang members?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty fantastic. They all seem to have the name, they're either a number or their name ends with Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Got Smiling Tiger.
Smiling Tiger, Jade-Faced Tiger.
Jade-Faced Tiger, who, didn't have a very jade face. I gotta throw that out there.
That was part of his, the sneakiness of his kung fu.
Because you
was he deceives you about the color of his face.
You would never think he was Jade-Faced Tiger because he doesn't look anything like a Jade-Faced Tiger.
No, he's an ivory-faced tiger, right?
Yeah, or like a flower-faced tiger, or, you know.
Yeah,
anything white.
He's a pale dude. But this is one of the, and once again, I'm only claiming this because I haven't seen one earlier that's done this. But this seems like one of the first movies I've seen that have the cartoony supervillains as the bad guys.
Yeah, their caricature is more than just caricature.
Yeah, like Smiling Tiger just kicks ass.
Yeah, he's smiling a lot.
He smiles through the whole thing. I mean, there's one scene where he doesn't smile.
You know,
just that's as Golden Swallow is escaping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's trouble if Smiling Tiger ain't smiling.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Jade Faced Tiger was pretty awesome. He was sort of that... you see a lot of these guys, the sort of like weasel face, sort of sniveling bad guy,
mm-hmm.
who sort of skulks around a lot. He's really easy to hate.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of those guys who's real tough when he's got all his crew around him, but he's a sniveling coward.
Yeah, as soon as you get him alone.
Oh, I love the sniveling coward character.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of them, too.
Yeah. As far as the hero characters, we get Golden Swallow.
Who, great name.
Yeah, Golden Swallow. She doesn't drink pee.
No, she. Just to clarify this is she does not drink pee throughout the entire movie.
No, it's because she wears a golden robe, and I assume it's because of her jumping skills.
She
sort of glides through the air like a swallow.
Yeah, she alights in the manner of a swallow.
Yeah, she alights. Yeah. Yeah, she's the kind of character that starts to go away in Shaw Brothers once, like directors like Chi Chang. Can I say Chi Chang?
Is it Chi-Chang?
Again, every time I say a new name, I'm going to have to apologize because I know it's wrong. It's C-H-E-H, and then Chang. Che-Chang. Che-Chang.
Che-Chang, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. He's one of the more prominent Shaw Brothers directors. We'll talk about a couple of his films, actually, tonight, or today, this morning, whenever you're listening to this. We'll be talking about it, I guess.
In the future.
But once he sorts of takes over the like reins of the studio, not the reins of the studio, but he becomes their go-to director. But yeah, in this, Golden Swallow kicks some ass.
She totally kicks some ass. She embarrasses the gang in one of the first fight scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
But still, it's sort of, this movie's a little interesting because it sort of has two protagonists, because you're following both Golden Swallow's story and Drunken Cat's story. And
yeah.
Drunken Cat is amazing. One of the better protagonists. And that's a really good thing about Shaw Brothers movies is they always set up a very likable, kick-ass protagonist.
Yeah, yeah. And Drunken Cat might be one of my favorites. Like, I'm not going to talk of any of their sort of martial arts heroes that they introduce after 1970 because we're going to be getting to that. But of the ones that we're going to talk about tonight, there's the one-armed swordsman himself.
He was pretty fantastic.
And one of the films that I don't think you've seen, which is Vengeance...
Right.
The protagonist in that is pretty kick-ass, but Drunken Cat is amazing. He's played by a guy named Hua Yue.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, and we'll see him in upcoming films. I think he's in another of the films we're going to talk about tonight already, but he's a pretty prominent Shaw Brothers actor.
And I like this about Shaw Brothers movies is you can watch them and you'll get the same director in a lot of movies, you'll get the same actors in a lot of movies. So if you start really liking an actor, which I have in many cases, you get to see them again and again and again in usually very different roles.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, very different in that the characters are different. They're still like martial artists and they have to defeat some evil or be evil.
Yeah, there's Jimmy Wang who plays the one-armed swordsman that we'll talk about soon. And he's so good at playing a one-armed swordsman that he ends up having to play that in a couple of sequels.
Really?
Plus a couple of, like, non-sequels. I think he's in a movie, don't quote me on this, called The One-Armed Boxer, which is totally unrelated, but it's also a martial artist with one arm. He's a very talented actor, but he was, for a while, he was a little bit pigeonholed as an actor who could only play a one-armed martial artist.
And he does have two arms, just to verify.
Absolutely. Like, there's a I'm going to talk a little bit about Golden Swallow later, which is the sequel to this movie, Come Drink With Me, and he's in that, and he has two arms. And that was after One-Armed Swordsman, because he was so good as a one-armed swordsman in that one.
He was.
That I kind of believed that he didn't have any, that arm.
His one-armed swordsmanship was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The best that I've seen.
One of the notable things I liked in this movie was the... there's a scene where Golden Swallow is being accosted by Smiling Tiger and Jade Face Tiger and their thugs in the inn.
Yeah.
And there's no way that Ang Lee wasn't directly influenced in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon by that scene.
Yeah, it was like, not an exact recreation, but the
inn looked a lot similar.
Yeah, the inn looked very similar. The actor who plays Golden Swallow, or actress...
Yeah,
looks a lot like the actress as Zhang Ziyi, who took part in that...
Pei Pei Chang.
Pei Pei Chang?
Yeah, that's Golden Swallow. I'm pretty sure that scene in Crouching Tiger was an homage to this. And there's been many homages in between. Like, the woman trying to peacefully have her wine. And not necessarily woman, but in this case, it's a woman.
Yeah.
And in the case of the Crouching Tiger scene, it's a woman. Trying to have her wine... And people sort of attack her from every side, and such a good martial artist that she doesn't have to rise from her seat.
Yeah.
She can keep preparing whatever it is, her meal or her wine, while she fends off these people.
Yeah.
They're throwing bottles of wine and benches at her.
And she's just sort of tossing them off like they were feathers.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a very, like, it's not like a Jason Statham or a Stallone action scene. It's all about the fact that she doesn't have to do anything, and that's what makes it badass.
Yeah, totally. And she, although being accused many times in this movie of being sort of over-violent and quick to anger, she's very reserved compared to action movies of today.
Yeah. I do have to call out the Golden Swallow in this movie for being a complete bitch.
Yeah, she's a bit of a C-word here.
Yeah, she was being really mean to the drunken cat. He saved her life twice, and it wasn't until the third time that he saved her life that she started to, like, think that maybe he was an okay guy to hang out with.
She is a bit
It's because he was a drunkard that she didn't like him.
But he was so affable. I don't know how you could not like him. I think she was very much a product of her palace upbringing, or her gubernatorial upbringing. And she was a little spoiled. So, yeah, I mean, she can be somewhat forgiven for being a bit of a cunt in the first part of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, she... this is another sort of element that... this movie seems to introduce to Shaw Brothers, which they duplicate often in the future, and that's the drunken master.
Which is a fantastic character.
Yeah. Whose drunkenness actually sort of improves his kung fu, or, you know, allows him to get to this place where he's sort of loose. You know, he's all loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
And is able to fight better.
And people always underestimate him, too, because he's drunk all the time.
Yeah, he's often underestimated, and he's almost always... portrayed as a morally good character, even though he's drunk all the time.
Which is fantastic. I really like that message.
Yeah. He represents sort of the underclass, and he's always, like, standing up for the little guy and getting pushed around, and he's not, you know, he never rushes to judge people. And
yeah, in this movie he's got a singing troupe of orphans, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the first instance of the Drunken Master. So I gotta give kudos, because I mean I've seen Drunken Master with Jackie Chan.
Yeah,
and I still like I like the Drunken Cat more.
Well, Drunken Cat is, he's one of the most likable characters I've seen in a Shaw Brothers movie.
Yeah.
Thus far.
Yeah.
But yeah, Come Drink With Me was a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
While we're seeing it. And it's a good, if you're starting out on the Shaw Brothers and you sort of want to go chronologically and you want to be watching specifically the Wuxia
movies.
Wuxia movies.
Yeah.
It's a good one to start with.
I could go on, and I will, for a couple more minutes, just about the kinds of things that I saw for the first time in this movie. And not for the first time chronologically in my life.
Yeah.
As far as Shaw Brothers, uh-huh. This is the first time where tons of people rush at each other with flashing swords.
Uh-huh.
Apparently are not hurt. Turn and face each other, and then a piece of their clothing falls off.
Which has been stolen in so many movies, from martial arts movies to just action movies in general,
mm-hmm.
to movies such as The Mask of Zorro with Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, and again, like I said, this happened way before. This happened in samurai movies, and samurai movies probably took that from Zorro. Because Zorro cuts up your shirt all the time. That's what he's all about, right? He cuts a Z in your shirt.
Yeah, absolutely.
In your blouse.
He shows his defiance by...
I have cut a Z in your blouse. That's not Zorro accent. Where the hell is he from, Zorro?
Zorro? I think he must be...
he's Spanish.
I think he's Spanish, or... Yeah, Antonio Banderas played him, so that makes sense.
But yeah, it's all about toying with your opponent.
Yeah.
Like, showing them, I could have cut your chest open, but instead I just cut your tie off, or whatever.
Yeah, now your pants are falling down, haha.
Yeah. Oh, one of my favorite sequences in a comic book ever is when Wolverine is still under the thumb of Department H in Canada.
Uh-huh.
I'm really going off on a tangent here, but I have a feeling that some of the people listening to this have read a comic book in their life. You fucking nerds. Wolverine cuts this guy's tie off, you know?
Yeah.
One of these Canadian suits who's trying to, like, send him on a mission that he doesn't agree with or something. He's fucking just like, Canadian I don't suits. Do what you say. I'm smoking a cigar. I'm cut your tie off. And maybe him decapitating the guy, I would have turned away and been repulsed, but him cutting the guy's tie off, that, like, said more than actually disemboweling the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that sort of reserved hero.
Yeah.
And Wolverine was very much influenced by samurai movies and the honor code and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's that, I mean, it's strange saying about Wolverine, but that reserved sort of hero where he'll show you he can fuck you up.
Yeah.
But he won't actually do it.
The drunken character we talked about as being something that they continue on with in later films, but also just in general, the character who has a disability and turns that into a positive. Like, the one-armed swordsman is all about that, how having a disadvantage or a fault or a flaw, like, increases your focus on your kung fu and stuff. And I mean, the drunkard character, like losing a limb, being a woman, whatever your disadvantage is, you can overcome it. Like,
it's the biggest disability of them all.
Absolutely.
You can overcome it, and that's what I like about these movies. Is most action movies, sort of the message of them is be a badass, fuck shit up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in these ones, it's be honorable.
Yeah, fuck shit up when that's your last option.
Yeah,
or to like. Keep your honor or avenge your fallen master.
Yeah, absolutely.
But not just to, like, if you're a thug who just giggles and wanders through town and pushes old ladies down, then in Shaw Brothers land, you're eventually going to get killed by a virtuous hero.
Yeah, but in Shaw Brothers land, you probably couldn't go pushing old ladies over because they know kung fu too, and they'd probably fuck you up.
Yeah.
And they've had a lot of time to practice their kung fu too.
I don't know. I loved Come Drink With Me. I think we've gushed about it enough, though.
That was a pretty fantastic movie.
And it does have a sequel entitled Golden Swallow,
mm-hmm.
which we've discussed the fact that this movie is just as much Drunken Cat's movie as it is Golden Swallow's.
Yeah.
And in the sequel, which is named after her, she's even less involved.
Which is baffling, but, Chinese people, they do things their own way.
Yeah, okay. The next movie we're going to talk about, the one that falls chronologically next, is The Sword and the Loot.
In The Sword and the Loot, we do not have as good things to say.
I didn't like The Sword and the Loot nearly as much as I liked
it. It was sort of shitty.
Yeah.
I felt like it was sort of a carryover from the... I haven't actually seen any of the pre-Wuxia Shaw Brothers movies, but just sort of reading the descriptions of them and then seeing The Sword and the Loot, it very much gave me the impression that it was sort of a transition movie.
Yeah, it probably felt a little bit like that, and I discovered this only very recently. It's because it's the third in a trilogy.
Oh. So
the first movie was Temple of the Red Lotus, and the second movie was Twin Swords.
Okay.
Which both came out in 1965.
Okay, so all around the same time. So this is just at the Shaw Brothers turning point from sort of classical period dramas to the awesome wuxia movies that most people know Shaw Brothers for today.
Yeah, yeah. This one's about like the stealing of different items by different clans, and then each clan like trying to get the other item back.
Yeah,
like the evil clan steals the magic loot.
Yep.
And then,
which is not actually magic; it just sort of shoots poison darts.
Well, first of all, the good guy shoots the bad guys.
Yeah.
One of the bad guys with the poisoned loot needle, which will kill you after 5 days. So then, the bad guys steal the loot, and they also like use that loot to poison a guy who knows where the cure is.
Right.
It's super convoluted, like. Just going through the plot is almost ridiculous.
Yeah. Because
there's like, they capture this guy,
They
poison him, and they pretend to let him go so that they can follow him and find out where the cure is. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a lot of crap. And, you know, there's a lot of women talking in this movie. It's just sort of, not that I don't mind women talking, but there's too much of it.
Yeah.
There wasn't much swordplay. It was a lot of plot development, which is good, but I mean,
there's a mention of a race against time right at the beginning, and well, and I said it too, even before they mentioned it. I'm like, oh, this is a set, because there's a poison involved in the plot, so that you're poisoned and there's a remote cure that you have to go find. So that's the perfect setup, but they just it's convoluted a little bit too much with like the different clans and the political intrigue or whatever.
There's a
couple of decent elements. There is a ragtag team of people.
Totally. And there's some decent...
There's the comedy fat man.
Yeah, the comedy fat man.
The Han Solo-like wanderer guy.
Yep.
Who's kind of like a drunken cat if he was sober. So he's not nearly as cool, but he's kind of alright. But there's no personal journeys, really, or character arcs in the movie.
Yeah. It's sort of your traditional wuxia Shaw Brothers movie. With all the awesome...
Yeah, traditional. Very traditional.
Yeah, very traditional. Just with all the cool elements taken out.
Mm-hmm.
The sword fighting is not as good. It's very sort of downplayed in the movie. It is fairly prominent, but it's still...
Yeah. And there's not enough those cool... And they don't have to be necessarily good guys. They can be bad guys. But those cool characters who are really iconic and really individualistic, like... Like, you don't have your smiling tigers or your jade face tigers. The Scarlet Maid is the one character who's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But she's very, like, stuffy. Yeah. She's kind of a superhero, but she's sort of stuffy, and she just sort of stands there and is stoic a lot.
Yeah.
She has a cool outfit and stuff.
Totally, totally.
But
yeah, she doesn't fight enough. She's in the movie for maybe, like, a minute screen time total.
Yeah. The most interesting thing for this, for me about this film was the introduction of a couple of actors who I went on to recognize in later films, like Jimmy Wang. Jimmy Wang is in this movie, and he is the one-armed swordsman, among tons of later things that we'll talk about in future. He doesn't get to show it in this, because none of the characters seem to have emotion in this film, really.
Yeah.
But in One-Armed Swordsman, I mean, this guy, he's a good actor. Like,
totally.
He goes through some crazy shit in that movie, and I've come to really enjoy Jimmy Wang. He's not really much in this movie, but he's in it. And then there's Li Lo, who is also another guy that, I mean, he's probably in most of the Shaw Brothers movies you've seen.
And which character did he play in Sword and the Loot?
Du Ying.
Right.
Yeah. I think that was the sort of wanderer character.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite characters in the movie, so that's good.
It's not a very notable entry. If you don't have time to watch all of the movies that we're talking about, and nobody will, Come Drink With Me is an essential, but this isn't.
Yeah, you can skip this one for sure.
Yeah.
It's just unless you like a lot of people talking about not much, which, I mean, you are listening to our podcast, so.
Yeah, we're talking about a lot. We're discussing a lot more issues than The Sword and the Loot did.
Yeah, we already covered way more ground in, like half an hour.
Yeah. So that brings us to The One-Armed Swordsman, which was, I guess.
Awesome.
Was this the movie that made us decide to do this?
I think so, yeah, because we had both seen, the 36 Chambers, 5 Deadly Venoms, Half-Sword Will Travel. And then we saw this movie and sort of started getting down the Shaw Brothers path. We saw that logo enough or something, and just we got hooked.
Yeah.
And that that awesome theme song, the Shaw Brothers music, it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's where Jimmy Wang sort of comes into his own. He becomes a martial arts hero in this movie.
Oh, man.
By playing the one-armed swordsman. This is the first Shaw Brothers movie that made $1 million.
A million Hong Kong bucks? Or
that's right, yeah, $1 million okay. Hong Kong bucks. I don't know what that means.
It's like $40, I think.
Is it?
No.
Yeah, but $40 back in 1967
that'll buy you two
was
other
like
movies.
$80 or something, wasn't it?
I think so.
We are talking about the One-Armed Swordsman. I really love this movie.
It was fantastic. It really like sort of...
This is the first of the movies that we've talked about that's directed by Che Chang.
Fantastic.
And he's... I don't even want to mention the stuff that he goes on to direct, because this is all talk for a later day.
Absolutely.
But he's a part of what becomes known as the Iron Triangle. And not only do I love that Shaw Brothers had stables of, like, actor-filmmaker combinations, but they had cool fucking, like, superhero team names, or, like...
Yeah, the Iron Triangle is an awesome name.
Iron Triangle is Lung T, David Chang, and Che Chang. Che Chang as the director, and Lee Tung, or Tung Lee, and David Chang as the actors. Again, we're going to get to one of those movies, I think, a little bit later. Yeah, this is the first Che Chang movie that I've seen, and he sort of goes on to make sort of the male-dominated... I don't know if I want to necessarily talk about his view of women, because I don't know what his view of women is, but the way that women were portrayed in his films... I mean, there's a bitch just cuts the guy's arm off for no reason.
I know, he wrongs her slightly.
He's going to this Kung Fu Academy.
Yep.
Or this Swordplay Academy. We haven't gotten into the Kung Fu yet. Kung Fu suggests, I guess, hand-to-hand combat. It's still a swordplay movie.
Yeah.
But the one-armed swordsman, he started off as the two-armed student.
Yeah.
But he was a lower-class guy. Like, I think his father was a servant of the Kung Fu Master, and when his father was killed, his last oath to the dying man was that he would train his son.
Yeah.
So his classmates look down on him because he's a low-class guy.
And he does all the chores around the place, and, you know, one of them has one of those, like, tiger hats that you see on, like, little Chinese girls these days.
Yeah, yeah. They're spoiled little bastards.
Yeah, they suck.
Yeah.
So basically, he sort of affronts them a little bit, because his swords play... Is a lot better than all of theirs.
Yeah, it is. But his biggest problem is that I think he rebukes the advances of the little bitchy girl.
Yeah, he does.
And so her and her two, like, partners in crime.
Douchebags.
The token douchebags. They ride off into the woods and they sort of confront him. And he doesn't want to fight them because he knows that he's better than them. It's the same thing as Drunken Cat. Like, he's the lowest, like, level of the societal rung, but he's the highest, like, moral character.
Yeah.
Which is something that Shaw Brothers is... I love them for.
Absolutely.
But he's not going to fight them until he has to, and I think he attempts to fight her hand-to-hand, and so she whips out a sword and cuts his arm off.
He cuts his fucking arm off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because he is, like, a low-class dude. Like, he does chores around the place... And she falls in love with him, and...
Yeah, they don't respect him.
Yeah, they don't respect him at all, to the point where they chop his fucking arm off.
Yeah, but he doesn't... You wouldn't blame the dude for seeking revenge, either.
No, absolutely not. And that's the other
thing. Fang
Kang. Fang Kang?
Yeah, I forgot to... I can't believe I haven't mentioned it till now. He's one of my favorite characters, and that's outside of the fact that his name is Fang Kang.
That's a fucking great name.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, in a stable of great names, like, we have to point out the really, really great names. Because we're going to come across, like, Run Run Shaw and Run Me Shaw. I sort of held back on that, but those are awesome names.
Jimmy Wang, the actor's name, is awesome.
Yeah, totally.
Fang Kang, the guy he's playing, is awesome.
Yeah, totally.
Everything about it is awesome.
Yeah. So, he's got one arm.
Yeah.
And he sort of stumbles off and is
he's
rushed back to health.
Yeah, by some other random woman.
Who is obviously on the lower class of the social rung as well.
Yeah.
But he's nursed back to health, and somehow he gets, I can't remember how, but he gets a document detailing how to do kung fu, but half of it is burned off.
Yeah, that's because there's the woman and her backstory is that I can't remember whether it was her father or her husband, who was a kung fu teacher or kung fu master slash teacher. And his love of martial arts got him killed. So she's like a pacifist kind of person now.
Right.
And in whatever the battle was that killed him, I guess there was a fire and his martial arts manual got burned. Or half of his martial arts manual got burned.
And it just happens to be, it burned off...
I love this.
...the arm on all the diagrams that the one-armed swordsman just happened to lose.
Right, yeah.
So now he's got this manual.
It burned the right side of every page.
Exactly.
Or I guess the left side of every page?
The left side of every page. I don't know. Do the Chinese, they do it backwards?
I don't know. I'm trying to picture like a mirror in front of me and stuff. It's not working. But anyway, yeah, all the instructions, if you're... All the instructions of what to do with your right hand are missing, which is perfect.
Because the one-armed swordsman only has a left arm.
Yeah.
And he was having some trouble. He was trying to practice his kung fu. He was a little bitter about the whole thing at first. But he gets into it.
Yeah.
He finds his manual and he's practicing and, you know, obviously falling in love with this girl because she's there. And he gets really fucking good at one-arm kung fu.
Yeah, he sure does. And he's not, like we said before, he's a good man. He's not the revengeful type.
No.
But he keeps getting harassed and harassed. And there is one of those awesome, like, evil, like, supervillain kind of guys in this, long-armed devil.
Right.
He has five spears arrayed along his back, like peacock feathers coming up. He just won't let the one-armed swordsman be.
No.
So he has to, like, he has to go against this woman's, like, wishes and get back into the kung fu, but only because he's forced to.
Yeah, and again, like, he could crush all of them with his one arm, but he doesn't because he's just a good guy. Like, he just wants to practice his kung fu and chop some logs for this lady and, you know, live in peace.
Yeah.
Eat some rice.
One of the things I like most about this is the sword lock, man. The sword lock.
The sword lock was fantastic. It was just sort of like a big metal stick with like a hooked part on the end.
Yeah. And basically the long arm devil's going around and using this sword lock, which is, if you have a sword and you try and attack someone with a sword lock, they cut your gut open.
Yeah.
It happens to like 50 guys in this movie.
You can't defeat
it.
No.
If you have a longish sword,
they'll grab it.
Yeah, yeah.
And lock it down.
Yeah, so they go around and they just randomly kill people in the streets. And the one-armed swordsman, he's forced to sort of come out of his retirement.
He has to.
Be heroic to stop them because they're unlawful, awful people.
They're bastards.
Yeah. We'll get to the bastard swordsman in a later episode,
yes,
too.
Yes, we absolutely will.
Yeah.
But long-arm devil, I mean, it's right in his name. He's a devil.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bad man.
But again, with this movie, it turns out that the things that normally would make the one-armed swordsman at a disadvantage are his advantage. I don't think we even mentioned it up till now, but he has a broken sword, which he inherited from somebody important in his past.
Yeah, I think it was his dad.
It might have been his dad. His dad or his teacher, they're sometimes the same man.
Yeah, they usually are.
But his broken sword and his one-armed technique ends up being like the only thing that can defeat the sword lock. And there's...
Because there's only half a sword. The top part of the sword that they lock all the time just ain't there.
There's nothing to lock.
Nope, nothing.
So he ends up getting his mad, awesome revenge. And
oh, yeah.
Here's a little bit of the taste of the amount, the excess blood that is to come in later Shaw movies.
Man.
This one's sort of nice and gooey.
Totally. We saw a little bit of the spraying blood in Come Drink With Me. Just a little bit. Just a taste.
Yeah, especially at the end.
Yep.
When the abbot sprayed his blood all over Drunken Cat's face.
Yeah,
and then Drunken Cat,
like,
yeah, he was wiping it off. Yeah. So good.
So One-Armed Swordsman was fantastic. Nice and gory, awesome characters, well-paced story.
Yeah. The next movie that we're going to talk about is Golden Swallow. I guess I'm just going to give a little bit of a...
Yeah, have a monologue here.
Yeah, I'll just monologue about Golden Swallow for a little while. It's another movie I wanted to touch on it because it's maybe not the next movie that Che Chang directed, but it's another movie that Che Chang directed.
Okay.
And it's sort of an indirect sequel to Come Drink With Me.
Again, it's...
Another thing that... This is what I love. And we discovered that Sword in the Loot was the third in the series. They don't advertise this. It's not easy. They don't call it Hellraiser 3.
Yeah.
Where you can, like, make... You know right off the bat before seeing it that you're two movies behind. A lot of times, these are self-contained stories within a greater story, and you can watch all of them. You can go back to the first one, but it doesn't really matter.
No.
I think it probably might have mattered with Sword and the Lute.
Maybe.
Because that did seem like a chapter.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And I guess that a lot of our sort of confusion and frustration with that movie did stem from the fact that we had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, but Pei-Pei Chang comes back again to play Golden Swallow.
Nice.
But
again, there's no pee involved here. It's just
no, like, she doesn't drink pee.
No, or get showered in it, or anything pee-related.
And when I first heard her name, I didn't giggle, and I didn't think that.
The Pei-Pei Chang?
Yeah, or Golden Swallow. I didn't giggle, and I didn't think that she drank pee when I first saw her name. But it's a Che Chang movie, so it's moving further away from a female heroine and towards a male heroine. Come Drink With Me was, I'd say 40% of the movie was focused on Golden Swallow.
Yep.
40 on Drunken Cat, and the remaining 20 on Smiling Tiger and Jade Face.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of smiling and Jade facedness, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's called a sequel, but it isn't really. It doesn't really share any similarities with the original. It's actually a movie about a character named Silver Rock. This is another Jimmy Wang instance, and Li Lo appears again for the second time in the movies that we're talking about tonight, and he plays the Iron Whip. The movie more focuses on the Jimmy Wang and the Li Lo characters, and I mean, I'm not even going to say much about the plot, because there's, like, not much to it.
Right.
It's an interesting film. The choreography is great, because Che Chang just films stuff well. And it's again an instance of that sort of move away from the female heroine, so much so that it seems like they, I don't know if it started out as a movie focusing on Golden Swallow, and then just they thought that Li Lo and Jimmy Wang were way too cool not to be prominent, but it's just one of those movies where I get a little bit confused as to why it's called Golden Swallow and not Silver Rock or Iron Whip.
Which are infinitely better names right off the bat.
And Jimmy Wang, it is worthwhile to see for Jimmy Wang's character of Silver Rock, because although it does sound like an 80s hair band.
It does a little bit, yeah.
Rock is spelled R-O-C and R-O-C-K, and the rock is a mythological bird from Chinese legend. So basically Jimmy Wang's gimmick is that he can jump really high, and he sort of swoops down on you like a bird.
Awesome.
And you can't defeat that kung fu skill of his.
No, of course not.
No.
I wouldn't know where to start defending against that.
No. Yeah, but it should be called Silver Rock, this movie. But it's, the next movie I'm going to talk about is another one, the second movie that you haven't seen.
Oh, okay.
And again, I'm not going to get too deep into it, because I don't even want to give too many spoilers, because I want you to see it.
Right. This is Vengeance we're talking about.
This is Vengeance, and I mentioned earlier the Iron Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the first movie with the Iron Triangle. Actually, Have Sword Will Travel, which I lent you, is 1969.
Right.
Which is a year before Vengeance, and that had the Iron Triangle. And that's director Che Chang and actors Lung Ti, whatever the fuck, and David Chang. So they first collaborated in Dead End, which is in 1969. And then shortly after in Have Sword Will Travel.
Which is a fantastic movie.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is a very interesting movie in that it takes place in the 1920s.
Which is not something we see much from the Shaw Brothers.
No, it's a lot more of almost sort of a crime noir movie than it is a martial arts movie. Although there is lots of martial arts in it. This is the movie just as I said earlier, that I wouldn't proclaim that movies were the first to do anything. this is, I think, the first of the Shaw Brothers movie that focused more on hand-to-hand combat.
Okay.
Which, the sort of, on kung fu than on swordplay.
Well, in the 1920s, there wasn't a lot of swordplay going on, I don't think.
No, no. But there was swords in the movie.
Of course.
There's always going to be swords.
Yeah, no, of course. I don't know how I could have doubted that.
But it's more about, like, one member of the Iron Triangle, I think it's Lung Ti, gets murdered early in the film.
Right.
And his brother, David Chang, finds this out and goes on, a 60-65 minute, like, revenge spree.
Awesome.
It's the Shaw Brothers Commando or nice. Taken or something. Although those movies are about kidnapped daughters, it's the same sort of thing. It's just like they set it up quickly,
yeah.
what he needs to do, and it's just it's like boss battles sort of along the way.
Right.
And there's lots of close-in knife stabbing, knife fighting, lots of blood.
Nice.
Some sort of jazzy kind of music. Like I really noticed that there's a saxophone in the score of this movie, and that's like instead of the sort of, well, the lutes and the harps that you would mm-hmm. get in your sort of other period pieces. So, yeah, the music's a little bit jazzier and sexier and stuff.
Nice.
But the fact that there's guns and swords, it's a lot, like, grittier feel. And this David Chang guy just, he's sort of dressed like Neo in The Matrix in this, like, like this really straight Nehru jacket and just goes around and kills people with no expression on his face.
And guaranteed Wachowskis have seen this movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Because all they do is steal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of stealing, like, I almost think that at the end, once we're done actually talking about the Shaw movies proper, we should probably add on a little bit of an analysis of Kill Bills 1 and 2. And, I mean, maybe that's going to be 9-10 months from now. Maybe even the RZA thing will be out. But
oh, I hope so. Man with the Iron Fist, we are so excited about this movie.
But I think I'm not going to watch Kill Bill 1 and 2 again until after we're done this, but I think I'll be able to view that movie completely differently once I'm completely yeah. schooled in the Shaw Brothers, because he put the entire Shaw Brothers logo and theme at the beginning of that movie.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to check it out as soon as we're done here. But yeah, I'm pretty sure the Shaw Brothers like logo appears at the beginning of the Kill Bill movies.
And it's very possible they're still existing today. Like they may well have co-produced that movie, right?
The film studio that we're sort of discussing here sort of shut down in 1985, and they've sort of sputtered back to life a few times since then.
Okay.
But I don't know in what capacity or to what, like, I don't know if they're still producing films.
It might just be a distribution thing at this point.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, Vengeance is an amazing film and definitely a landmark in the sort of hand-to-hand combat aspect of the Shaw Brothers stuff.
Cool. Definitely have to check that one out.
Yeah, the Iron Triangle, baby. We're not really going to talk about the Five Venoms at all, but I mean the fact
worth seeing. My God,
yeah, the fact that like that's not only the name of one of the movies, but that's also another name for one of their stables. There's five actors who are called the Five Venoms.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
And we'll get to that, and we'll learn all about them, and you'll learn along with us.
Absolutely,
you fuckers,
you fucking bitches.
The last Shaw Brothers movie that we're going to talk about, and that sort of brings us up to the end of 1970, is Heads for Sale.
Which was an interesting film. It wasn't good.
I didn't really like it either. This is one of those movies that, it kind of like Sword and the Loot, it felt like I was missing something.
But there are no prequels that we missed out on.
Not that I can find. And it doesn't seem to be a very popular movie. I think I found two people on the entire internet who'd reviewed it.
Yeah.
But it's by a director that I haven't seen another movie by. It doesn't have any of the actors. There's no Jimmy Wang. There's no Li Lo. We don't get any Smiling Tiger references.
Wow.
There's no sort of the iconic people or characters that I've been used to up till now.
That being said, it does fit fairly well in the Shaw Brothers universe because it's, you know, set in 1400s or 1600s China or whatever, and there's a bunch of sword fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
The plot itself is sort of all over the place. There's a lot of guys.
Yeah. There's a... The woman, her name is Billian.
Billian?
Billian.
Oh, yeah, Billian. Yeah, right.
She has the hops for some guy.
Women.
So basically, I think she, if I remember correctly, and a lot of the plot points are sort of not very memorable, but I think she is rejected by this guy and then ends up, he ends up being arrested. And then she cuts off some heads so that she
yeah.
can get sent to jail to be with him.
Yeah, I think what happened was somebody in her clan brought back a message from this guy who was very much enamored with her.
He was enamored with her. See, that's one thing. I thought that she liked him and he didn't like her or something.
No, that was trickery on a man from their clan's part because he had a crush on Billian.
Oh, that's right.
He told that to Billie-Ann so she would hate the other guy.
Then he gets arrested, and it's not till he gets arrested, now she's really into him and needs to rescue him.
Yeah, totally. She beats him up a couple times in between.
Yeah.
But yeah, he gets arrested, and she's really sad about that. And so she cuts off the head of two guys.
Yeah, two Mongol-looking, like Mongol warriors kind of looking guys.
Yeah, they
look like Genghis Khan
yep.
motherfuckers.
And this is a good part to mention this, but... a theme we've seen in Shaw Brothers movies so far, which we should have mentioned in Come Drink With Me, is that women in these movies are completely interchangeable with men based on what they're wearing. Not what they look like. Like, they can still have makeup on, they can still very much look like women, but if they're wearing their hair down or in a certain way and they're wearing, like, a man's clothing, which...
Wow, I can't believe I forgot to talk about that in Come Drink With Me, yeah.
Yeah, as far
you
as
can
as
just put a pair of earrings on, and people... Or I guess... The best way to say it is, you take your earrings off and people think you're a man.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
That's how Golden Swallow was able to, like, infiltrate so many different places.
Yeah.
And then she'd, like, well, she never did this, but she could pull out an earring and put it in, and somebody would be like, Golden Swallow appeared out of nothing! Where did that dude go? yeah, that's, I mean, that's a common thing. And that was first introduced in Come Drink With Me, is man disguised as woman or woman disguised as man, but not very well.
No, it's literally just like one piece of clothing that doesn't obscure your face at all or the way your body looks or anything. It's just, for some reason, certain pieces of clothing tip people off in this time in China to the fact that you're a man.
Heads for Sale had some pretty, like, cliched flashback scenes.
Yeah, that was...
the camera zooms in, the focus softens.
It's sort of that wavy...
And you hear harps. Oh my, do you hear harps.
Oh man, it's harps like crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's the first time we saw it in a Shaw Brothers movie. This movie is just a fucking hodgepodge.
Yeah, it's super convoluted. It's like she ends up cutting off two heads and getting caught with one of them so she can get sent to jail. And she knows that this her friend in jail is sick. So she, like, gives the other head to, like, her friend who's a doctor. So he gets set up to be arrested.
Uh-huh.
And then he gets sent to jail and they... break out and fight, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of fighting near the end. Yeah, there's weird flashbacks. It's sort of...
There is one cool guy who had... There's, like, one super-powered character who blows smoke at you, and then... Well, it shows his face blowing smoke, and then they cut to your face with a blue light on it. I'm not sure if that hurts or what.
It seems like it hurts. The guys all sort of drop in pain and then die immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's none of that cool magic kung fu...
Not really, no. The most entertaining part about this movie is you really don't know what's going to happen next because there's no coherent plot line, really.
I keep... the decapitations happen fairly early, but with a title like Heads for Sale, I was at least thinking that at any moment someone's head could come off.
It was a 30-second part of the movie. Like, they took one of the most insignificant plot points in the entire movie and named the movie after it.
Well, it's like calling the Golden Swallow movie Golden Swallow when it doesn't feature her, really.
So it's like naming a movie after somebody's sword or whatever.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure happens many, many times, but, you know, a sword you see for 2 minutes.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, it wasn't a very good movie.
So that's 6 Shaw Brothers movies, that's 6 early Shaw Brothers movies.
Yeah, and you've got an education, you know about the Iron Triangle, you know about the history, the early history of Shaw Brothers.
Yeah, you know a little bit about people who are becoming some of my favorite people, like Jimmy Wang and Che Chang and Li Lo. Characters that I really like the Smiling Tiger.
Yeah, fantastic.
Oh,
and
I hope
we'll see a lot more of him in the upcoming movies.
Just the, like, overall thoughts on, like, what did you feel about the sort of group of movies that we watched? I mean, because you've seen some of the later ones, so how do you think that they sort of stack up?
Well, like I said earlier...
The violence and bloodshed is pretty light in comparison.
It's pretty light. They amped it up a lot more on One-Armed Swordsman, for sure. It seems like there are a lot of elements of Shaw Brothers movies, later Shaw Brothers movies, that, again, they developed and sort of made a style out of.
Yeah.
That we see sort of... in play here, but they haven't really nailed down exactly what makes an awesome Shaw Brothers movie an awesome Shaw Brothers movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's still, they're still shifting from the romantic clan warfare to the, like, stories of brotherhood and loyalty and vengeance.
Chopping shit up.
Yeah. I guess it'll be mid-October.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're going to watch some Shaw Brothers movies from maybe the last little bit of 1970, but probably 1970 and 71 and 1972. Yeah. I'd say.
We're going to have to take it slow on these. We all have to do it.
They start to come real fast and real furious, and there's lots of notable ones coming. But we'd like to start a little feature just because there's some opinions on movies that I can't keep bottled in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we really haven't had a place or time to talk about just recent stuff that we've seen and what we think about it. We're not going to go into detail like we do about the main films, but going to give you some mini reviews or just our thoughts in a few sentences, I guess, on some stuff that we've checked out recently in the cinema.
Some, not literally in the cinema. We were sitting on the couch. Well, sure. This is just the column we'll call, or the bit of the show we'll call shit we've seen lately.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, shit we've seen lately. So I guess first up, easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Yeah.
What did we see that in recently? It was a British movie of some sort.
Hmm.
Can't remember.
Really? You really can't remember?
Puppet Master?
No, think of the most British movie that you've probably ever seen. Attack
the Block.
Yeah.
But I think we should go chronologically.
Wow, you don't know what country it came for or the title.
Yeah, Attack the Block.
Yeah.
Whatever, I know about it. So first up, I guess we'll talk about Red State, because it's...
Yeah, we saw Red State a little while ago.
We want to get this out of the way.
I
had faith in Kevin Smith. I really did.
I still have faith in Kevin Smith. To put it more accurately, I'm always rooting for Kevin Smith.
Absolutely. He's a very likable guy. He's definitely made some films that I got a lot of laughs out of, a lot of enjoyment out of.
Yeah, Mallrats is always going to be one of my favorite comedies ever.
Absolutely.
I think Dogma had some clever, very, very clever bits.
Absolutely.
And he's been really shitty for a decade, though.
Yeah, he hasn't made a good movie.
And
we
watched... Not that he's been shitty, but his movies have been. They've been... And I'm sure he'd be the first to admit that Jersey Girl and Cop Out are no Dogma and Mallrats.
Absolutely.
Or even Chasing Amy.
Well, and Cop Out was one of the worst pieces of shit we've ever seen. Like, we often will sit through movies that have almost no redeeming qualities in them whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just to say that we've watched them and
here's the thing, though. Like, Cop Out was an action comedy featuring one of my favorite action actors, and one of my favorite comedians.
Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan.
That's a fucking,
killer combo.
Yeah, that's those are ingredients that you have trouble, not making well.
Kevin Smith fucking shit all over it.
Anyway.
We won't talk about Cop Out. Red State. So
it's a big step up from Cop Out, I'll say that much about it.
It definitely is. There's no music in this one, which...
No.
The best thing I can say about this movie is that Kevin Smith was very restrained in putting his own music in the movies, because I know... He must have had a hand, or his buddy composed the music for some of the last movies.
It was really nice, and it was nice and devoid of score. And to be honest, for a Kevin Smith movie, it was pretty fucking classy,
pretty restrained. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not gonna say I hate it. My opinion of it has softened a bit. I've watched it again since.
Yeah,
I really like Michael Parks in it as the preacher. I think his scenes are too long.
Yeah,
and I don't think he's given necessarily the right things to say.
No,
but I do find that I enjoy watching him.
Absolutely. Well, and the weird thing about Kevin Smith in these movies is he picked a lot of really good actors, and they all act very well in the movies. But the lines he gives them to say are just atrocious. Like, I feel bad that they're putting so much into these roles and speaking these fucking dumb, cliched, awful, awful sentences.
He's really going for a Tarantino, Coen Brothers feel.
Yeah.
Like, with extended dialogue scenes.
Yeah.
There was at one point when we were watching John Goodman talk on his Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And was it might have been 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, I can forgive all of this stuff if he had just given us a horror movie like he promised.
That was one of the things that irked me the most.
It wasn't a horror, and it's still, people give it bad reviews and call it a bad horror movie. I don't even think it is a horror movie.
There's about, I would say, 2 minutes of horror elements in this whole thing, where they've got a guy wrapped up in saran wrap and they're sacrificing people in a church and they've got people tied up in the basement. That's pretty horror.
Yeah,
but every other element of the movie,
they're not really torturing those people.
No, they don't get to torturing
them. There's hostages in this movie, but I don't I don't know what the part was that you're supposed to be scared of. Maybe we're supposed to want the kids to get away.
Yeah, I didn't. They were sort of douchebags.
Yeah, they were.
And I think, from Kevin Smith's perspective, he's a staunch atheist. And
no, he's not.
Isn't he?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that Kevin Smith loves God.
Does he really?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, well...
I'm pretty sure that he's a Christian. He made Dogma. Did you see Dogma?
Yeah, that made fun of religion a whole bunch.
It featured angels, though.
It did, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that he thinks that God is real.
It's possible, but yeah, maybe.
Anyway.
Okay, so I have this all wrong, but it seems just...
Not necessarily, I don't know.
Yeah, possibly, but I think the horror element for Kevin Smith in this movie was he just thinks those churches are super scary.
Yeah.
Like, and they mentioned the Phelpses sort of offhand, but then they sort of dismiss them a little bit. But this is obviously a movie stemmed from the Phelps Roper Westboro
Baptist it's Westboro, Church. and then the ending is Waco.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of a mix of both. And then everything in between is just sort of like hacky dialogue and scenes that don't need to be there, and not really much of coherent, like nothing much happens in this movie.
It tries to focus a lot on the sort of quirky characters that the Coen brothers and the Tarantinos specialize in.
Yeah.
Like the Stephen Root as the closeted gay sheriff. And
Again, a very talented actor, character actor put into this movie, and just fucking a horrible role to have him in. Like, I was embarrassed for Stephen Root, because this character was just, like, the most, disgusting, unbelievable, awful fucking character.
Yeah, he didn't make a good case for his side of things.
Nobody did in this movie. Like, no. John Goodman did.
Well, John Goodman was a stand-up guy.
Yeah, he was a pretty stand-up guy, but I mean, like...
But other than the John Goodman and the Michael Parks performance, like, the movie just, it had a lack of horror, and that's what I was promised.
Yeah.
And then at the end, and I know that Kevin Smith is willing to put God in his movies.
Yeah.
Because Alanis Morissette.
Was God.
Yeah. I was hoping for a little bit of an Alanis Morissette at the end, and I don't know if people might not be prepared spoiler-wise, so I don't know.
Spoiler alert.
But there's a moment at the end where God either can or can't arrive, and I didn't like the choice that he made as to whether God did or didn't arrive.
It was a fucking terrible, terrible choice. Almost everything in this movie was a fucking terrible choice. It was just sort of, like, sloppily put together, meandering, wasn't horrific at all. And that's the other thing. It wasn't horrific, it wasn't a comedy, it wasn't a drama. It couldn't pick what the fuck it wanted to be.
Yeah.
Which was one of the most frustrating things in the movie, is that...
It didn't... If he wanted to make a horror movie, then I don't know what... Did he cut out all of the horror scenes?
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's probably like an hour of stuff on the cutting room floor that actually was scary.
Yeah.
But he wanted to make a comedy because he's Kevin Smith.
Yeah, like, I think I liked it a little more than you. I think it's a movie that I might go back to in the future. But it fell short in so many ways, and... They're really easy fixes.
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
Easy fixes. And Kevin Smith he's a smart enough guy that he didn't have to make a movie that disappointed me on those levels that it did. Knowing me like I know he does, knowing my tastes.
Yeah, because nobody
can make Mallrats and have me enjoy it that much and not be a bit of a kindred spirit.
Absolutely.
And he knows the kind of horror movie that. Is a good horror movie. I think he knows what good horror is. He didn't make a good horror movie, though.
He didn't make a horror movie.
I think he tried.
He did.
Yeah.
And failed miserably.
As far as failing miserably, what about Attack the Block? Do you think that failed miserably?
I wouldn't say failed miserably. It's definitely a better movie than Red State was. I mean, it's sort of apples and oranges, but Attack the Block...
Yeah, Attack the Block is a lot funner, for sure.
It's a lot more fun, it's more coherent, it's better made.
It's not more coherent? Well, more coherent in the story, not in the dialogue, though.
No, I mean, I'm sure the dialogue is coherent to someone, but being a non-British youth...
You're not a Cockney.
I'm not a Cockney at all, so I can understand some of the dialogue in Shaw Brothers movies. I didn't understand what the fuck they were saying in this movie.
No.
I mean, I still got what was going on, but it was definitely not helped very much by the dialogue.
Yeah, I think maybe while I was talking to you about it, I probably, being in the Shaw Brothers mindset, I probably mentioned Vengeance, which was a movie that I watched without any English subtitles.
Yep.
And it was kind of like watching a movie without subtitles, watching the first like half an hour of Attack the Block, where you're just roaming the streets with the kids, because it's like Anthony Burgess wrote their dialogue or something. It's absolutely like, I just don't get it.
Oh, it's fucking ludicrous, bruv.
But I think it's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie. I think it's a good enough movie that it puts everything in context for you that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
the kid actors. I don't like kid actors, but these kid actors are good enough that just the sour looks on their faces while they're saying these incomprehensible Cockney things are enough to make me know what they're trying to say.
Yeah, and there's characters developed in this movie, and, like, you know, start to finish, it's well-paced. I mean, it's a cool idea. I like anything with aliens. I mean, I was pretty sold on that.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't like the aliens' day-glow teeth at all, though.
I thought that was sort of cool.
Yeah, you thought it was cool, and I did too, but then, like, I watched too much Discovery or Nature Channel, and that's... A predator wouldn't do that. Wouldn't put something shiny right up front.
No, it is really stupid from an evolutionary standpoint, but, you know, it's stack the block. I can forgive it a little bit.
I mean, I do have to... Like, I did like the movie, but I also have to say that the whole plot line... Like, these must be the easiest kind of scripts to write.
Yeah.
That something falls from the sky, and the characters must react to it.
Yeah.
Like, what about the skyline?
Yeah.
Attack Los Angeles? Battle Los Angeles,
yeah. District 9 to some extent.
Yeah, I'm not saying that that means it's a bad movie, because I adore District 9.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's such an easy, easy story.
Yeah, and
it's so common.
Yeah, and they didn't do much more with it. Like, the aliens landed, and some characters had to fend them off, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, I would... Goonies is a good comparison to it, as far as, like, the Goonies... if you take the Goonies out of middle class, suburban white America, and put them in like a London
ghetto,
instead of sloth, you get things falling from the sky
that have glow in the dark teeth.
But yeah, it's that kind of. I guess I didn't mind that the dialogue was incomprehensible, because I think that was part of the message of the movie.
Yeah. It's a different language they're speaking, you know, kids these days.
But the language of
rap music.
But yeah, but that the language of protecting the people that you care about and your neighbors is the same everywhere.
True.
Like, once they start, like, looking after their own, it doesn't matter, like, what they're saying or anything, because it's a universally recognized human urge to protect your own and to protect your block.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And that's what I really liked about it, is that... at no point did you become sympathetic with the characters, but that was because of the filmmaking. It wasn't because of the characters. They were, like, bad kids.
Yeah,
they were
all sort of dicks, yeah.
But at the same time, they reveal themselves to just be like everyone else.
Yeah.
At their very core. Like, when... I've brought up comic books, and now I'm going to bring up Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
But one of the things that I remember about my youth was a speech that Ronald Reagan gave about the Cold War... and talking about how the differences between the U.S. and the Soviet Union would just disappear if there was ever an alien invasion. And that, like, we would realize that our human differences really don't mean anything, and that...
Ronald Reagan say that?
Yeah.
Alan Moore stole that. Watchmen.
Alan Moore stole a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he did.
Alan Moore also hates comic books that he's never read. That guy's a fucking asshole.
He's a fucking asshole. I think we should make a point of saying that on every show. Alan Moore is a fucking asshole.
Yeah, he is. He's a
bearded twat.
And he might actually listen to this, because he only does things he can do in his house. I don't think he goes outside. So he probably listens to a lot of podcasts.
Probably, yeah. So if you're listening, Alan Moore, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
Go get fucked.
So, yeah, I liked Attack the Block.
Yeah, Attack the Block was okay. It definitely entertained me, and, like, I think my main problem was... I did become sympathetic to the characters at some point, but at no point in the movie did I like any of the characters. And that is sort of a big thing for me in movies. Like, I do have to relate to some of the characters and like them a little bit, and I didn't find a lot of that happening in Attack the Block.
But, okay, the main dude, what was his name?
Moses.
Moses. You didn't feel anything when you found out he was 15 and had Spider-Man comforter?
Yeah, again, I was sympathetic to him because he is just a kid and everything.
It's a product of his neighborhood.
He is. But he was still a big douchebag.
Yeah, he was a big douchebag. Yeah. Another thing I like about the movie is that I don't know how I feel about the characters. The movie redeems them all in my eyes at the end.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's a triumphant ending, but the characters don't change at all. They don't learn anything.
No, but they step up to the plate.
They do.
Yeah.
And again, sympathetic. I still don't like them.
Yeah. I don't like the characters, but I did like the movie.
Yeah, I got a lot of entertainment out of the movie. It wasn't a bad movie.
No.
What
else did we see recently? What did we watch last night?
Joe Dante's The Hole.
Oh, yeah, The Hole. The Hole had a not completely dissimilar idea. But more like The Goonies than it is like Attack the Block.
It actually cribbed a lot of stuff. It was equal parts Poltergeist,
mm-hmm.
In that it had an evil, sadistic clown doll that terrorized a little kid.
Yeah, which got us into watching Puppet Master 3.
Oh my god, which we'll get into in a second.
Puppet Master 3 was a better movie, I think.
Oh, much better movie. The whole was entertaining. It was like a made-for-TV movie by Joe Dante.
It was a PG movie, like a kind of a semi-spooky, well-acted kids horror movie.
And we ran into another movie very recently that had a good child actor in it. Like that little blonde kid in the
He was actually better than the kid that was 10 years older than him. The emo kid.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. No, the whole wasn't too bad. And Joe Dante had a couple of good entries in the Masters of Horror, which I liked. I can't remember what they're called now.
No.
But it's good to see. It's good to see.
Yeah, he's still making quality movies on a slightly smaller scale, but it's still quality entertainment.
Yeah, I like it when people in that generation, like, was it Joel Schumacher who directed that Blood Creek movie?
Yeah, totally.
It was good to see him back after, like...
And doing an awesome horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking forward to a sequel to that, actually, but that never happened.
And then we watched...
Master 3.
Puppet Master 3, Toulon's Revenge. Yeah.
And Puppet Master is a sort of... It's an interesting franchise, because I think it's a little bit underrated.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, not too much, because it is animated puppets who just sort of mutter and grab at your ankles.
Yeah, they don't actually have any lines. Just throughout the movie, they sort of make,
And Six Shooter laughs a lot.
Yeah, he does. He's a happy guy.
Yeah.
And the Joker guy laughs a lot, too.
But I like the Puppet Master movies because they have a very interesting... Like, there's the French puppet maker, Toulon,
yep.
who was introduced first in this movie in Puppet Master 3, but he's, like, sort of referenced in the first two, and then it follows his adventures in the next couple, and there's, like, an interesting backstory, and there's the... In this movie, we find out that the Nazis are trying to use Toulon's magic... puppet resurrecting formula.
Which I gotta mention is very similar, I just thought of this now, to the Reanimator goo.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same goo, actually.
Well, yeah, bright green goo, wow. Bright green goo gets a lot of play in the movies that we like.
But yeah, Puppet Master 3 was a solid, I haven't seen any of the other ones, so I can't really say relative to the other ones, but it is a fairly solid movie.
We might actually threaten to do a Puppet Master episode. Because there's nine of them.
There are fucking nine of those movies. And that's, like, the Saw movies were one thing, because we didn't actually have any interest besides sort of morbid curiosity in those.
We wanted to force there was going to be no other way I would ever watch, because I'd seen the first one.
Yeah.
But there would have been nothing else in the world other than, like, having a deadline and it being sort of an assignment for me to ever watch the other six.
Yeah.
And I was like, as a horror fan, I should see them.
Yeah.
Scott E. Weinberg kind of likes them. There's got to be something there.
Yeah, totally. And Scott E. Weinberg, like, say what you want about the guy. I agree with him a lot of the time.
Yeah. He can be a bit of a dick, but I think I think he wears it well.
Absolutely.
He can back it up. He can back up his dickiness with facts, usually, which I appreciate.
Absolutely.
Is there any other movies that you want to talk about? Because if we're already talking about Twitter, there's a couple... I'd like to shout out a couple people. But what else have we seen lately that...
I think that's all I've seen recently.
I saw Bridesmaids. I'm not going to go into depth about movies that only I've seen, but I liked Bridesmaids.
I've seen Bridesmaids.
Yeah?
Yeah, Bridesmaids was fantastic. Kristen Wiig is the funniest.
The scene with her and Maya Rudolph... putting things on their teeth at the beginning was so fucking funny.
That
they play off each other so well.
Yeah, that scene in the cafe in the beginning is one of the most charming fucking things ever. I mean, if it hadn't been illegal to do so because I saw this in a theater, it would have literally charmed my pants off.
Yeah, they're really, really talented. And Rose Byrne is also really talented because she plays a really annoying person, and I'm pretty sure she's not annoying.
No,
At least I know that I wouldn't be annoyed by her presence.
No, she's charming.
Oh, yeah.
This whole movie was just very charming and hilarious.
Chris O'Dowd, who we all love from the IT Crowd.
Oh, absolutely.
So good.
And if you haven't seen the IT Crowd, quit being a dick.
And I watched Transformers 3.
Oh, I didn't see that, and I never will.
Do you want me to not talk about Transformers 3, because one day we're going to do a Transformers episode?
Fuck you.
No, fuck that. Transformers 3 was terrible, never watch it.
Okay, I won't.
Isn't it
like 2 hours and 45 minutes long or something?
It's like 2 hours and 12 minutes long or something.
Fuck.
I don't know who first said this, I'm not going to take credit for it, but it is like having a friend throw a handful of Lego at you and push you down the stairs at the same time. It's just all, I believe it was Shakespeare who said, it's all sound and fury signifying nothing.
Yeah.
That sums up the whole Transformers franchise for me.
Well, we just classed this podcast up a whole bunch. But
the only thing that it potentially had going for it was the cast, or some of the cast, but Michael Bay just fucked with them. Like, John Turturro's already been fucked up by the first couple of Transformers movies.
Yeah.
And then Frances McDormand and John Malkovich get pulled into the mess, and it's not pretty.
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf says, go, and no.
Yep.
And then there's some metal smashes against metal, and then the metal that's still standing at the end stands with Shia LaBeouf.
Yep.
And the credits roll, and Optimus Prime says something like, "Good on ya, kids," or something. And then that's the end of Transformers 3. What a piece of shit. The Transformers movies are fucking awful, and I hate them, and I hate Michael Bay. The only good thing he's ever made is The Island.
And The Rock.
And The Rock. The Rock. I keep forgetting about The Rock because it had Nicolas Cage in it.
And it was
to me, it's not a Michael Bay movie. It's a Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah, totally.
And a John Malkovich movie.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay, well, Michael Bay's done some good things, but... And I know there's a lot of people who really appreciate Transformers and defend it as just... You know, it's pure entertainment, and I get that, but it didn't entertain me in
not
the least.
At all.
It just made me angry. There's racist Transformers. It insults me. It pokes me in the eye. It doesn't... It's not eye candy. It's eye poker.
Eye explosion.
Yeah.
Eye explosion.
So that's gonna wrap us up for episode 3, I think.
Yeah.
I'd like to give a couple of shouts out to some of our friends that we interact with on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
I'm a really big fan of Twitter.
Yeah.
And the reason that I'm a big fan of Twitter is in large part because of these people. Anyone who's listens to our podcast on a regular basis, which would be 3 times now, knows at Drunk on VHS, Mo Porn. He's a good person.
He's a really good guy.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's very drunk, and he's very politically incorrect, and we appreciate drunken, politically incorrect people.
And mustachioed.
Yeah.
Can't forget mustachioed.
He's a good person. The after-movie diner, who is not nearly as depraved because he's British.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of them. I'm not sure who is represented by the Twitter feed at after-movie diner, but the gentleman that I know from that podcast... is a British gentleman, and he's a super cool dude. So follow After Movie Diner and at Basement Reviews. That's another awesome like genre film review podcast. They also have their podcast up on Podomatic. So if you're listening to us on the Podomatic site, just go to their little search field and search up Basement Reviews. Because if you like this, then you'll like that. They gave us a shout out in their recent episode where they talked about the movie Super.
Nice.
And they gave a very entertaining their review of Super, a movie which you have to see even though you dislike Rainn Wilson.
I hate him.
Yeah. David DeMoss is another fellow. Now, his Twitter feed is at AYTIWS. I've tried to pronounce it a number of times in the past, and I thought it was a word. It stands for And You Thought It Was Safe, which is his awesome blog at andyouthoughtitwassafe.com, where he reviews monster movies and silly movies and B-movies and action movies and...
Movies.
The movies that we like.
Yeah.
But that's, yeah, Dave is at AYTIWS. There's at Chadwick Ginther. I don't have to talk about Chadwick Ginther. You know him.
I know Chadwick Ginther.
If you like the writings of people like Neil Gaiman and Jim Butcher and urban fantasy and
uh-huh.
stuff like that, I think in a couple of years he's going to be one of those people who publishes those books.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've read a little bit of his stuff. He's a very talented writer. We used to work with him at the bookstore down the road.
Uh-huh.
He reads a lot of the comic books that I read. He's
yep.
just a generally awesome dude, and
he looks like he should be on a book jacket.
Yeah, he looks a little bit like China Mieville, if anyone out there knows that that British author who's he's a brilliant guy who looks like he could kick your ass.
Yeah.
Which is like a combination that I'll never have. Nobody thinks I can kick their ass, and nobody thinks I'm brilliant. But Chadwick Ginther is both. So follow him at his name, at Chadwick Ginther. There's also at Three Black Geeks. Oh, God, I have a lot of good things to say about Three Black Geeks. They like wrestling.
Big ups.
Yeah. You can talk horror movies with them. You can talk wrestling. They like anime. They've actually convinced me to watch an anime. The name I can't remember right now, but They claim it's the anime version of Commando.
Wow.
Yeah, okay, I'll find it. They tweeted about it at some point. But
wow.
For anyone who likes nerdy shit, follow the Three Black Geeks. They're good people. There's a couple of Twitter feeds that sort of represent a group of people. There's at Daily Grindhouse, which Mo contributes to the Daily Grindhouse. Doug Tilly, who's another guy on Twitter I like, contributes to the Daily Grindhouse. That's a good... those are good people. At Drive-In Mob, The Cultural Gutter, Draconic Versus, and Tragedy Man. These are all people that I sort of met through the Drive-In Mob. So, as well as the Drive-In Mob, follow at Cultural Gutter, at Draconic Versus, and at Tragedy Man. Oh, God bless Twitter. So that's going to do it. We're going to be back in 2 weeks, hopefully even a little less than 2 weeks. We're going to shoot for the end of September.
Yep.
If it shows up the first couple days of October, it's just because, like,
we have
so much sex with women that we find that sometimes our podcast has to be bumped back a couple of days just because we don't want to disappoint women.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's cabin season, and our lumberjacking careers have really spiked recently. So
that's true. We go up there and we tap for the maple syrup,
yep,
too.
We do that.
Canadians are all conscripted into the lumberjack and maple syrup tapping militia that we have up here.
Yeah, it's very similar to the Israeli people having to go into the army.
Yeah.
But we have to lumberjack and drink maple syrup and have sex with tons of women.
Yeah, so when we're going to podcast around that schedule, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, in the future sometime.